in Memphis that FBI informants were sitting in a room with Stoner, who was in Jackson, Mississippi at the time. And before the news had hit, the phone rang, Stoner picks it up, and he's like, oh good, he's a good one now, a good N-word now, and then hung up. And then they heard the news that King had been killed. But the FBI's contention has always been that J.B. Stoner wasn't involved because he wasn't in Memphis. But one of the things that I found in my research is that Stoner, like, early on, he was directly involved with bombings, but very quickly, he came the week before, he set things up, and then he left town. So the fact that Stoner wasn't in town for, you know, in Memphis for the assassination means nothing about whether or not he was involved. Hmm. So that was, you know, very shocking to me to realize, like, again, like, if these folks had been dealt with when they were in Nashville before they were getting really good at committing violence and getting away with it, the 60s would have just looked a lot different.
Betsy Phillips, historian and author of the new book, Dynamite Nashville, Unmasking the FBI, the KKK, and the Bombers Beyond Their Control. Her book prompted Nashville's mayor to now reopen a police investigation into the three civil rights era bombings she focuses on. To see the full interview, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
The leaves are falling, the birds are chirping, and KBOO's Fall Membership Drive is back. If you enjoy alternative radio that pushes the status quo, then support KBOO by becoming a member today. Donate online at kboo.fm/give between now and September 21st and support independent airwaves.
Election season is here, and at KBOO, we want Portlanders to be prepared to face their ballots with confidence. We've got a brand new limited series coming to our airwaves and your favorite podcast platform. It's called Running on Air, a daily radio roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. Every weekday, your favorite KBOO host will be facilitating a deeper conversation with these candidates, so tune in. Find the full schedule on our website, kboo.fm/runningonair. Listen to any episodes of Running on Air that you miss on the KBOO website or wherever you get your podcasts. That's kboo.fm/runningonair.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this special membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, hot weather comes to the Willamette Valley for the next few days.
Hot weather also means a risk of fire. A fire weather watch is on for Thursday, too.
And in national news, a school shooter in Georgia kills four.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, September 4th, 2024. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Eliza Yurkov.
And I'm Reed Johnson. A heat wave is already taking hold in Oregon and southwest Washington, with the entire Willamette Valley under an excessive heat warning that runs from noon Thursday through Friday evening. The National Weather Service says the weather will be dangerously hot, with temperatures around 100 degrees. Overnight, the lows will range from the upper 50s to the low 70s. Evenings will be warmest in urban areas, the Columbia River Gorge, and the Cascade Foothills. Officials warn that heat-related illnesses increase significantly during extreme heat. They recommend people drink plenty of fluids, take precautions while outside, and check on your relatives and neighbors. Two cooling centers will be open in Multnomah County on Thursday, September 5th at noon, and two libraries will extend their hours to help keep folks cool. The first cooling center is at Cook Plaza at 19421 Southeast Stark Street in Gresham. The second is located at the Portland Covenant Church at 4046 Northeast Martin Luther King Boulevard, Jr. Boulevard in Portland. That's again the first at Cook Plaza at 19421 Southeast Stark Street in Gresham. The second at Portland Covenant Church at 4046 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Portland. TriMet won't turn anyone away riding to or from a cooling center from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. tomorrow. The cooling centers will be open from noon to 9 p.m. Hours at the Central and Gresham libraries will be extended on Thursday as well, with bottled water available to people who need it.
There is a fire weather watch for all of Thursday from the northern Willamette Valley through the Clark County lowlands in Washington. Hot temperatures, low humidity, and potentially high wind could be a potent recipe for fire to spread, and fast. The National Weather Service issued this warning this afternoon. They urge people to use extra caution with potential fire starting sources, especially in grassy areas. Fire weather meteorologist John Bonk told KPIC Roseburg, quote, "I just encourage the public to be very careful this weekend, and especially for the days leading up to it, as the firefighters have their hands full. Resources are spread thin across the entire country right now. Any new fires will certainly tax the system and make it that much harder for the firefighters to protect the people's lives and property," end quote. There are 111 active fires burning in Oregon, with 1.5 million acres burned so far this season.
Oregon, California, and Washington will be receiving over $130 million from the federal government to improve electric car charging and hydrogen fueling stations. Most of the money, $102 million, will be used to create a zero-emission fueling network along 2,500 miles of key freight corridors in the three states for medium and heavy-duty trucks and buses. There is now only one publicly accessible charging station for large trucks in Oregon. That's Electric Island on Swan Island. The Oregon Department of Transportation is still waiting to hear how much of the money the state will receive and how many stations of which type it can build. All the stations in Oregon will be along the I-5 corridor. Also, Portland and 16 other cities in the northern Willamette Valley will receive $15 million to install publicly accessible electric vehicle chargers for cars and other light-duty vehicles. The money will be used to build up to 500 EV chargers at about 125 sites. These stations will be built at multifamily buildings and other public locations such as libraries, parks, and community centers for people without access to home charging. Transportation is Oregon's biggest source of greenhouse gas emissions, over a third of the total, with medium and heavy-duty trucks accounting for more than 40% of the state's on-road emissions. The state is pledged to reduce emissions to 45% below 1990 levels by 2035.
Two students and two teachers were killed this morning in a shooting in Georgia. It happened at Appalachie High School, about 50 miles northeast of Atlanta. Four were killed, and nine others have been taken to hospitals with injuries, including one life-flighted to an Atlanta trauma center. The single suspect, a 14-year-old student at the school, is in custody. The county sheriff said the suspect will be charged with murder and handled as an adult. Appalachie High is a rural school with around 1,800 students. Several other schools in the area were temporarily under lockdown. Chris Brown, president of the gun control advocacy group Brady, said, quote, "Thoughts, prayers, and platitudes will never be enough. Gun violence is an all-too-American crisis that demands action, and all of us deserve leaders who will finally put the safety of our children and communities above gun industry profits," end quote. This is the 385th mass shooting in the U.S. this year.
Groups that fight for safer roads are urging California Governor Gavin Newsom to sign a bill that would require new vehicles to have a speed monitoring system that warns drivers when they go more than 10 miles over the speed limit. Senate Bill 961 has already passed both houses of the state legislature. Mark Vukcevic with the advocacy organization Streets for All says pedestrian deaths are an epidemic.
Pedestrian deaths have increased 68% since 2011, I believe, with traffic violence as a whole being the number one cause of death for all people from the age of 5 to 44 in the state of California.
Several big car manufacturers have come out in opposition to the bill, arguing that the warnings could annoy and distract drivers. The change would only apply to new cars sold after 2030 and would add an estimated $60 to $100 to the cost of a car. Vukcevic says if drivers slow down even a few miles per hour, it would greatly reduce both the number of accidents and the suffering and death that result.
The actual physical effect of getting hit by a car at that speed is from, let's say, 23 to 30 miles per hour. It's really a substantial difference on how likely it is someone actually lives or dies.
The European Union has already passed a similar measure, but California would be the first state in the U.S. to require speed warning systems.
Climate change is making seasonal allergies worse. In some areas, allergy season lasts 3 weeks longer than it used to. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Every summer, ragweed pollen fills the air, causing people with ragweed allergies to sniffle and sneeze. And climate change is now making seasonal allergies even worse and causing them to last longer. Warmer temperatures and higher concentrations of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere cause some plants to produce more pollen, which can worsen symptoms. And as winters get shorter, plants can start making pollen earlier in the spring and continue producing pollen later in the fall. In some parts of North America, this means allergy season now lasts more than 3 weeks longer than it used to.
If you have respiratory allergies, then even one day longer is miserable.
Teddy Potter is a professor of nursing at the University of Minnesota and director of the Center for Planetary Health and Environmental Justice. She says allergies can lead to a cascade of health effects, ranging from poor sleep to heightened anxiety, reducing overall quality of life. So Potter recommends that people stay aware of daily pollen counts and talk with a healthcare provider to find medication and advice on how to alleviate symptoms.
Really work with the health professionals to say, how do I get through this season and what do I do?
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
In national news, Trump says he had every right to interfere with the last presidential election. Civil rights groups say Texas authorities are attempting to suppress the Latino vote. And Ohio's Secretary of State unveils stricter rules surrounding ballot drop boxes. With more on the story, it's Catherine Carley with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Whoever heard you get indicted for interfering with a presidential election where you have every right to do it, you get indicted and your poll numbers go up.
Former President Donald Trump says he may be facing federal and state charges for trying to overturn the 2020 election, but insists he had every right to do it. Trump has not said whether he would accept the results of this year's contest should he lose. Vice President Kamala Harris's campaign says Trump's remarks show he believes he's above the law. 2 months until Election Day, the race remains a dead heat. Trump is at a Fox News town hall in Pennsylvania while the Harris campaign continues its reproductive freedom bus tour. That began in Florida, where Democratic Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz says support for a ballot measure to put abortion rights in the state's constitution is motivating voters.
Democrats pushed for it, but 20% of the people who signed the petition to get it on the ballot were Republicans.
Trump now says he'll vote against the measure just days after saying he would vote for it because the state's current 6-week abortion ban is too strict. A Pennsylvania court is blocking a law making election workers reject mail-in ballots with missing or incorrect dates on their return envelopes. Mimi McKinsey with the Public Interest Law Center says the law resulted in the loss of more than 10,000 mail-in ballots during the 2022 midterms.
To not count votes simply because of a momentary lapse when someone is writing the date on the mail-in ballot, that violates the Pennsylvania Constitution.
A Latino civil rights group is asking the U.S. Justice Department to investigate Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton's order that volunteers' homes be searched for evidence of vote fraud. Phones, computers, and documents were seized, but no charges have been filed. Critics call it Gestapo-style intimidation, and Roman Palomares with the League of United Latin American Citizens says it's voter suppression.
It is evident through his patterns of lawsuits, raids, searches, and seizures that he is trying to keep Latinos from voting.
Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose says residents can no longer use drop boxes to return absentee ballots for someone else. Rather, they must be delivered in person to the State Board of Elections. Democratic State Rep Alicia Reese calls it an undemocratic power grab.
It's less than 70 days before an election, and we're coming with new rules.
But state GOP chair Alex Triantafilo says there's still a month before early voting begins, giving people ample time to learn the new rules.
This is a simple safeguard that we have for anyone who decides they're going to cast a ballot for another citizen.
All remaining drop boxes in the state will have to have signs explaining the new rule, threatening jail time if it's broken. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $30,000 by September 21st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with the organizers of the Portland Writers Picnic. At 6, it's Running On Air, KBOO's daily roundtable with the people running to represent Portland. Tonight's episode features candidates from District 3. Then at 7, the global sale. Tonight's weather is bright and sunny with clear skies, a high of 97, and nighttime temperature of 64. An excessive heat warning is in effect. Tomorrow's weather, near record high temperatures of 102, strong breezes, 64, cool nighttime with high humidity. Today in history, in 1957, the Little Rock Nine were barred from entering Little Rock Central High School by a riot of white students and the Arkansas National Guard. They were the first students to desegregate schools in Arkansas. 2 weeks later, President Eisenhower mobilized the 1,200 Airborne, ensuring the nine students' admittance to the school. The quote of the day is from filmmaker Federico Fellini, who said, quote, "I think television has betrayed the meaning of democratic speech, adding visual chaos to the confusion of voices. What role does silence have in all this noise?"
Climate change is impacting the quality of wild berries in Alaska, and researchers want to do something about it. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Wild Alaska berries are one of the most nutritious and antioxidant-rich foods, but climate change is altering where berries grow in Alaska and when. So researchers at the University of Alaska Fairbanks are gathering data to make sure Alaskans can both pick wild and cultivated berries in the decades to come. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra has the story.
About 10 years ago, Janelle Winter noticed that berries in Metlakatla were much smaller than normal. So did a lot of other people in the community. It was one of the early warning signs of what would later be officially deemed a regional drought.
And then all of a sudden, all of those indicators that we had been taking note of made sense.
Winter works for the Metlakatla Indian community in Southeast Alaska. She says she's also noticed other changes in berries. Service berries or Saskatoon are thriving.
Now we're seeing more and more and more of it.
Metlakatla is just one of many Alaskan communities noticing dramatic changes in berry production. In the past few years, people have reported late salmon berries in Seldovia, insects on cloudberries in Trapper Creek, and early blueberries in Fairbanks. Changes like this impact berry harvests that Alaskans rely on for nutrition, culture, and connection to their environment. And berries are expensive to import, so many Alaskans can't replace them in their diet if they have a low harvest year. Katie Spellman is a researcher at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, or UAF. For the past two decades, UAF has been collecting data on berry size and quality, life cycle timing, and impacts of snowpack to help better understand the impact of climate change. The good news, Spellman says, is that Alaska berries are not going to disappear.
They might shift their regions so that we have to start using other berries as substitutes for the ones that we've traditionally picked.
Because climate change impacts are unpredictable, Spellman says the best way communities can adapt is to have a diversity of berry plants. In Metlakatla, Janelle Winter is part of a team working to increase resilience and food security. Winter says they're planting as many fruiting and edible plants as they can throughout the community. They hope that means people in Metlakatla can harvest berries for many generations to come. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Navajo Nation President Boone Nygren has signed legislation to provide for the protection of Navajo people when it comes to the transportation of radioactive materials on Navajo land. Nygren signed amendments last week to strengthen a 2012 tribal law to regulate transportation of radioactive materials across the reservation. This follows the transfer of two trucks carrying uranium ore through the Navajo Nation in July by a production company near the Grand Canyon. The Navajo Nation says it was unauthorized and tried to stop the truck. At a signing ceremony in Window Rock, Arizona, which was streamed online, Nygren says in August he joined marchers on a highway on the reservation who protested the transport and were sending the message that the Navajo Nation needs to be respected.
And we wanted to make clear that the people that live and reside on the Navajo Nation should be respected at all times.
Nygren says the amendments to the law sends the message to respect tribal sovereignty. The Cherokee Nation recently launched the Cherokee Film Institute. It's a tribally operated education and workforce development center. The Cherokee Film Institute is intended to create educational and career opportunities aimed at removing barriers for Native Americans to enter the film and media industry. It also aims at creating a sustainable workforce in and around the tribal reservation in Oklahoma. The Institute's first courses are set to begin in January. The program is open to anyone 18 and older. Native American applicants will be able to apply for a tuition waiver to help remove barriers for entry into the industry. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Independent farmers are calling on D.C. lawmakers to level the playing field with large AG producers in the next farm bill. They want to restore country of origin labeling for beef, update the century-old Packers and Stockyards Act, and address a consolidated marketplace. Mark Moran has more in Iowa.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture is considering new rules that seek to level the playing field for independent farmers in Iowa and across the country. Food price gouging has become a campaign issue in the Midwest, where the election could be won or lost. Pete and Berlin Wobeater raise cattle on about 300 acres in central Iowa. Berlin says family farmers want Congress to strengthen the century-old Packers and Stockyards Act, address alleged food price gouging, and fix the lack of competition in the beef industry, where four companies control 85% of the market.
And that's not going to happen the more consolidated it is. And then, if there isn't a market for all of our beef, then I guess some of us need to get out. But it needs to be fair.
The Biden administration has proposed a new rule designed to update the Packers and Stockyards Act, which was signed in 1921. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is taking public comment through September 11th. Congress is considering restoring mandatory country of origin labeling for beef in the next farm bill, which would allow domestic producers to charge higher prices for beef grown in the U.S. Wobeater says despite being in an industry that has become highly consolidated among large corporate ag producers, she and Pete have continued to succeed on their 300 acres in Toledo, Iowa.
And I think that has been my husband's approach to things. In the 80s, when it was go big or get out, he said, no, that's not the way he was raised. You just kind of stay steady, stay within your budget, don't overspend, and it's worked for us.
The 2023 Farm Bill, which has already been extended until the end of this month, remains on hold in Washington. This is Mark Moran for Iowa News Service.
The U.S. Forest Service is considering changes to modernize the Northwest Forest Plan. While it was hailed as a success when it was created 30 years ago, the Forest Service wants to update the plan to address new challenges to the region. To help with the process, the agency convened an advisory committee, which unanimously approved 192 recommendations for the plan. Susan Jane Brown with the nonprofit environmental law firm Silvix Resources co-chaired the committee. She says tribal inclusion and rights were among the most critical issues to address because they weren't included in the original plan.
That was a pretty substantial oversight and something that the Federal Advisory Committee wanted to correct this time around. We really wanted to center Indigenous perspectives and Indigenous knowledge in the management of these forests.
The plan guides management of more than 19 million acres of land across Washington, Oregon, and Northern California. The Forest Service is moving forward with the amendment process for the plan. Brown says a draft impact statement was expected in August, but that has been pushed back. The agency is incorporating the committee's recommendations for a draft analysis, as well as other alternatives. The Forest Service is looking to address three threats: invasive species, particularly large and severe wildfires, and climate change. Brown says these issues need to be addressed quickly.
Our forests and communities are in desperate need of clear management direction, given the wildfire crisis, given the climate crisis that we're also experiencing right now. So we really need an updated management plan that is equipped to deal with those new challenges.
Travis Joseph is the head of the Oregon Forest Resource Council and also co-chaired the Federal Advisory Committee. He says the committee gathered diverse interests and did the hard work to collaborate on the recommendations to the Forest Service.
There is a path forward, and we can move beyond the hyperbole and the quote-unquote forest wars of the past. And if we focus on what we have in common and the outcomes that we want to achieve, we can move beyond the past and frankly build a brighter future.
That was Travis Joseph with the American Forest Resource Council.
Oregon is in the upper echelon when it comes to the number of women in higher office. Four of the five statewide elected positions in the state are held by women, including Tina Kotek in the governor's office. That's a rare achievement. Director of the Center for American Women in Politics, Debbie Walsh, says the national average for women in statewide elected offices is about 1 in 3. However, the number of women in these positions in Oregon is guaranteed to go down in November, with men running in 2 of the 5 positions. Walsh says this is the nature of politics.
No state can just say, well, we fixed the problem of women's underrepresentation in politics. We don't need to do the work of recruiting and supporting women to run. That work is ongoing.
Men will be facing off in Oregon's Secretary of State and Attorney General races in November, but Walsh notes that the state has set a high bar elsewhere too. Women hold half of its congressional seats, and women are in a little more than 40% of the seats in the state legislature. Walsh says women face a number of barriers to office. While they raise comparable amounts of money to men running in comparable races, they're less likely to self-fund their campaigns. She says women are more dependent on small donors, which can be good because it means more people are investing in the campaign.
The flip side of that is that the amount of time and energy and work that it takes to raise $1,000 is just exponentially higher and harder for a candidate who is more dependent on those low-level dollars or those low-dollar donations.
Women running for office has become a big storyline this year with Vice President Kamala Harris's run for president. Walsh says if she wins, it will be a big breakthrough for women, especially women of color.
The only downside to seeing a woman elected at the very top is that people then think that the problem is solved because we've elected a woman president of the United States, and complacency will not get us to gender equity across levels of office.
That was Debbie Walsh from the Center for American Women and Politics.
It is Wednesday, and that means a visit from KBOO News poet Dan Raphael, who feels that, for political action, summer vacation is over.
Trump supporters raised $500,000 to throw a party for the Jewish fraternity that saved an American flag from campus pro-Palestinian protesters. The fraternity said the money should be used for relief in Israel and Gaza. The party happened anyway. That's the type of response you can expect from the next Republican administration. Where would Trump be without the major corporate media profiting from reporting on, analyzing, and debunking what he just said, when we all know facts have nothing to do with it, except for the facts of Trump's sociopathic narcissism, his lies, exaggerations, bigotry, and his hatred of those who deny him? Many folks are still on a Kamala high, but there's 2 months to go. Let's be positive to those not in our camp, which takes work, and let's let the Democratic Party know what they need to stand on a range of issues, including the ecology, wars, social justice, and breaking the death spiral of capitalism. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, September 4th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Ken Jones, and Morgan. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, Suzanne Potter, Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and Mark Moran. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eliza Yurkov.
And I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, so now is a great time to join. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. Ken Jones will be speaking with the organizers of the Portland Writers' Picnic.